Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. Here we are, November 6th, and the frost is on the pumpkin. Actually, the frost is on the windshield of the truck driving here this morning. So, getting kind of cold out there. We're 9 days away from start of firearm season for deer. And, I've got a lot to do still. I actually have to sight in a 44 Magnum, and I have to check the sight in on my 50 Beowulf. I don't think there'll be anything else I'll use. Maybe the muzzleloader again. I may just be ready for that. So, got to think about that. I've been having fun working on projects and working on old guns. Actually, I was just looking one up. Interesting. And it's funny because I read a story in the new Guns and Ammo magazine, and it's something I've been talking about for years, and it's called, Heirloom or something like that. It's on the back page before you get to the back cover. And the guy was talking about getting a gun from his father. And I want to say that I have mentioned this before, and this has to do with the handing down of guns, okay? By the time you get to be 60, 70, 80 years old, you have got a gun safe full of guns, okay? And you may have, I have a passion for 22s. And some of them don't mean a lot to me. Some of them are ones that I picked up as a project, or I've gotten free from friends, or spent $20 on, or something like that, and they're good guns, and all the grandsons and granddaughters will get one eventually. But every once in a while, you come up with one that's important to you, and I've mentioned this before. I have a Remington, essentially, is it a Speedmaster or a Wingmaster? It's a 22 pump. That one's one that was near and dear to me because it was from my grandfather. Well, this past week or so when I came back from Indiana after my dad has passed, and we have, it's been a month now. And, I've been helping my mom with things, arrangements and stuff on financial things and stuff like that. And I want to say that I came back and I brought back an old gun of his. It's a Ranger 19, which is actually like a Sears, and it's a Stevens Model 86 rebranded as a Ranger 22 with a tube fed magazine, tubular magazine and a bolt action. And it's funny because I was just looking it up, and I know that it was made like between 1936 and 43. And that it has no serial number on it, of course, because they didn't have to have them before 1968. So at any rate, I was looking, and somebody was doing a project on one on a video, and it has the exact same crack across the neck. I want to say that if one of them has a flaw, a lot of them have a flaw. We've got a call already. We've got Don from Ypsilanti on a Kel-Tec P50, which I think is a cool gun. Have you got one?
I do. I just picked one up a couple weeks ago.
Where did you find that?
That was out at Hearing Guns. How about 96 in Grand River?
Yeah.
Out in that area?
Yeah, how about that? Well, cool. Tell us about it.
Well, I haven't taken it out of the box yet. Been on order for 9 months, and I finally got one. And I guess I'm, according to them, about the only one that's got one around here. But I just wonder what your opinion was. I thought it was a neat gun when I heard about it, so I put in an order, And I'm going to, with the weather.
It is on my short list of 50-round semi-automatic 5.7 by 28 pistols that I'd want to order, that's for sure.
That's exactly what it is.
I love that. I think I get a kick out of it because it uses the same magazines that is that are like the PS90s and stuff where the it lays down flat on top and then it turns the round at the. It's really a cool idea, and it kind of looks like a ray gun to me or a space gun. Don't you think so?
Star Trek, all the way.
yes. I think it is cool. It is a really neat gun, and that 5.7 by 28 is a very, very good self-defense round, as well as, well, it doesn't have much in the way of recoil as well. So it's,
yes, and it's got a good trajectory.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really cool gun. Now, you've had it out of the box, at least. You just haven't had it to the range.
Well, I had it out of the box and just held it, but I haven't put any rounds in it or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
I was out of town and just got back in town, so it's something that I'll drool a little bit and pull out and take care of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you took it out of the box and you caressed it, right? That's what you did.
All of the above.
Yeah, I think it's a neat gun. I think that it would be great self-defense gun. It's kind of big, okay? So it's not really a good concealed carry gun, but it is an excellent self-defense gun. And with 50 rounds, holy cow. I mean, you got a whole box of that 5.7 by 28 on there, which is not that actually expensive. I think the prices have come down a little bit. It used to be that only the PS90 and the P90s and the FNH, which is it? Their 5.7. That was the only thing that shot them. So they were rather expensive and rather rare. But now there are other guns, the Kel-Tec, the Ruger 57, stuff like that. So that helps bring the cost down on the ammunition.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be the case.
Well,
If I could ask you one other gun that I happen to order, and based upon your tremendous knowledge, I'd like to get your opinion. Cimarron Bad Boy 10mm 8-inch hexagon barrel.
A Cimarron Bad Boy?
Yep, 10mm, single action.
You know, I am not familiar with that one. I will have to take a look. But anything in 10mm is a very potent round. 10mm has had a resurgence, I want to say, in the last couple of years. I want to say a few years ago, 10 years ago, it was kind of like out of favor. And then they went with the 40 Smith & Wesson, which people called the 40 short and weak, okay, because it was a 10mm shortened, right?
Yeah.
But I always thought the 40 Smith & Wesson, I've got a couple of them, were very potent. They have had a resurgence. And I want to say there are a lot of, especially 1911s made in 10mm now. I have seen a bunch of pistol caliber carbines lately made in 10mm. And I want to, which one was it? I actually just saw one the other day. A 10mm, believe it or not, a High Point, but also the Kel-Tec and things like that. There's a whole bunch of interesting guns made out of them.
Good.
So I think the Cimarron single action, the Cimarron is a like a single action peacemaker design, right? Cowboy action kind of thing.
Very much.
And Cimarron,
I have the peacemaker.
Yeah.
And I also have the Schofield 45 caliber.
Okay. Well, that
beautiful
is so cool.
Gun.
Now, I want to hear both. Now, you've got that one on order. You don't have that one yet.
The 10mm?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on order.
Okay.
Cimarron was making it in 44 caliber. And then, due to what you've just said, they were coming out with the 10.
Yep.
And it just has not been made available to the public at this point.
I think it'll be cool. I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to a range report on that Kel-Tec P50, okay?
Okay.
When you get
if
that
you
thing.
If you don't drool on it too much, I'd even show it to you.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's I would definitely drool all over it if I saw it, but I want to hear how it shoots, okay? So I do know that, and like I know Theron has a PS90, and I have another friend that have one, and they shoot outstanding. I shot one at the where was it? It was at the firing line when we were doing a fundraiser for like Pat Colbeck or something years ago, and I just loved it. And the lack of recoil and stuff. I mean, it's like a you know, it's like AR-15s. They don't they have a lot of bang, but they don't have a lot of recoil. So I can't wait.
Very good one.
Thank you for the call, and
okay,
I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, bye bye.
I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Oh, I'm excited now. We got a range report coming on a P-50, which he's got to get out there and shoot that thing, you know, a couple hundred rounds to break it in at least. And I think that would be a really cool, I mean, it's got excellent ballistics. It's got outstanding handling. I just think it's a really cool gun, so that'll be pretty neat. Well, let's see. I was jumping into the 22 Ranger, which I'll talk about more at a later time because I'm going to be working on that one. Let's go through some of the normal things. We got a Lapeer gun and knife show today and tomorrow, or yesterday and today. A Port Huron gun show. Gosh, all up in the thumb area there. Port Huron gun show on today and tomorrow. The Old Time gun show in Redford. And the American Heritage gun show in Fremont over on the other side of the state. So that's pretty cool. Ohio, we've got the Miami Town gun show, gun and knife show, the Ashland gun show, the Tri-State gun show. That's in Lima, Ohio. And the Wooster gun show in Wooster, Ohio. And for you guys out in Columbia City or Jeff City out there, we've got the Warsaw gun show at Warsaw, the Christian County gun show in Nixa, Missouri, the Homefield gun show in Kansas City, and the Hallsville Fairgrounds in Hallsville, Missouri, the gun show. And actually, we got three in New York, believe it or not. Little Valley Volunteer Fire Department fun show at the Cattaraugus County Fairgrounds in Little Valley, New York. The Middletown Firearms and Knife Show at Orange County Fairgrounds. And the Oneonta Gun Show in Oneonta, New York at the Quality Inn. So very good. Let's see. I want to say I'm disappointed in Michigan State Police again. Here it is. It's November 6th. They don't have the November numbers up. They have really, I want to say, ever since Big Gretchen's taken over, they have not been very forthcoming on CPL reports and stuff. Sometimes they're a week or two late. It's just, and by the way, they always have a lot of backlogs. Now, I'll give them an extra few days if they're going to clear this backlog of 7,200 people that they had, but no new numbers yet, so I'll have them for next week. Excuse me. Let's see, the pre-Black Friday gun show. This I mentioned this last week. This is Bill Kahn. Remember Bill I'm having a drink of icy cold water here to try to clear my throat a little bit. Holy cow. We always said that with our kids to get them to drink more water. We go, would you like some icy cold water? And they go, oh, yes, I want icy cold water. Instead of just having some water, okay? So at any rate, let's see, Bill Kahn, who was our friend from the Mule Skinner boot shop out in Chelsea, is going to be on November 20th out at Ann Arbor Arms having a you know, like a booth set up, and he'll have knives or he always has knife cases too, but sheaths and holsters and belts and all sorts of fun things. So at any rate, I wanted to mention that again. I'll mention it again next week too as we lead up to that. Let's see, a gun project, and I worked on it this week. I mentioned it last week, and I got to say, I had fun with it. This was a Ruger PC Charger. We have got Theron. Hi, Theron. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dick. You actually pulled me off the treadmill. the reason I called is I shot the same PS90 you did at that Kobik fundraiser, and I immediately bought one. Love it. They come apart as stupid simple as an AK-47, actually even more simple. And, yeah, deadly accurate. But the thing that I'm calling about is I haven't heard you, didn't hear the show, but that round in the PS90 and now the Kel-Tec, I heard that was developed by FN for special, so that an agent could stick it under their sport coat and not have to carry an AR-15 or AK-47 where they're like in Secret Service, and the round is just as lethal, flash reaches out like a 5.56. Is there any truth to that?
I believe that to be true. I got to say that it was a military early development, and actually one of the things is that this is one that caused a bunch of people to be upset because they said, now they're developing pistol rounds that can shoot through armor. Well, it's a very high velocity, very thin, very pointed bullet, and they do well against armor. And that's why they were trying to outlaw them at first. Mm-hmm. But I don't know the entire history of it, other than it does have military tales. But you know what? That's a good, I'm going to write that down. That's a good storyline. I did not hear about that it was a Russian development, though.
No, not Russian. It was Fabrique Nationale, but Fabrique Nationale, however you pronounce it.
Oh.
But they were developed specifically the PS90. And again, I'd really like you to answer if it's true or not, so that agents could conceal them easily and have a super lethal round.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that because it is a super, and actually, you know, we know it's very lethal because it was used out at Fort Hood by that Islamic
right.
terrorist out there. But it is, and actually it's a very good self-defense round, not just meant to be, you know, like through armor and stuff like that. It's also a good kind of plinking round. It's not all that expensive when you
right.
consider the cost of it. Now, it used to be the guns were real expensive. That FN H-57 and the PS-90s and things like that were quite expensive. But now you've got these Kel-Tecs and Rugers down at a reasonable price. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I do believe that to be true. I will do a little history on that. We'll talk about that next week then, okay?
Please do. You're the PhD of guns, all things guns. So, well, anyway, thanks, and I'll look forward to hearing that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening today.
See you. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Ah, yeah, I remember Theron was so excited when he was, after he shot that. Now, I was shooting the other thing I brought to that one, I brought a PTR 91, which was it's like the old H&K 91s and 93s that in 308, I was having a blast at that thing too. And I had just put a new suppressor on it, not a suppressor, but a compensator on it that reduced the muzzle, the recoil and stuff. It actually increased the muzzle blast a little bit because it's deflecting it out, but it reduced the recoil by 50%, and it was a blast, literally, to shoot. And literally and figuratively, that's what Dan Bongino always says. He, you know, literally and figuratively. But I had fun shooting that, and then a guy said, hey, do you want to shoot this PS90? And I shot it. It was like, oh, my God, is this great. And Theron had to go right out and buy one. So, and actually, you know, he's had a soft spot in his heart for quite a while on that one. And now that there's pistols out there, especially this Kel-Tec that holds the entire, you know, it's one thing to have, okay, this FNH, the 57, and the Ruger, they hold 20 rounds. And you go, pshaw, 20 rounds. The Kel-Tec P-50 holds 50 rounds, an entire box of that ammo. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, so speaking of those kind of guns, I was working on this project for a friend, John from Danville, and Barb from Danville. And actually, it's Barb's gun, okay? And she also got the bug to get a Frankfurt Arsenal binary trigger for it. So given that they And John's been a gun guy for years. He was a Class 3 machine gun dealer back in the 70s when I was a kid with him. We had a lot of fun. had a lot of fun with machine guns. But they were and are legal, okay? But so this one with the binary trigger was pretty cool. So this week I started working on it. And I took my time to figure it out because it does come apart differently than other ones. It's a blowback design, doesn't have a lock breech. It's got some polymer on it. It's just a really neat design, this PC charger. And it's a takedown, believe it or not. It's got like 6 inches of barrel you can take it off. So you can even make it shorter than it is already. I mean, it's amazing. And I took it apart, took the trigger group out. I did follow the directions. I do read the instructions on these things. I also watch YouTube videos on it before I get started. And there are some things that are tricky when you put it together. And also, I want to say I was fairly pleased. I put it together. It felt pretty nice. It's a little bit scratchy to start out with, and I think they mentioned online that they have to wear in a little bit. I believe that. There's some things, some angles on trigger return springs and stuff that actually in the base design of the gun are a little bit, I want to say compromised, but once you got it all back together, it runs, okay? And so I took it out in the side yard and I shot it, and in both regular. First, I made sure that the safety did work as it's supposed to. Then I shot it in regular semi-automatic, and then I put it in the binary position, and it does exactly what it's supposed to, okay? It fires in both directions of the trigger pull, and it was pretty cool. I really enjoyed it, and it emptied the mag pretty quickly. And so I think that Barb will be pretty happy with it. So at any rate, it's been a fun project to work on. I'm going to take it out and make sure it's sighted in correctly. She just wants it sighted in at 25 yards or so because it's really a close-range kind of gun in 9mm. So at any rate, that's my report on the gun project. And I'll answer Theron's question next week on the history of the 5.7 by 28 round. And there's probably even more history than we know. I'll have to dig in deep and see what we can find, okay? Let's see. Cook County revives gun and ammo tax after legal smackdown. Now, this is exactly what's going on out there in the politics world, okay? When they lose in Virginia, when they almost lose in New Jersey, and I love this one, where the guy who's a truck driver that spent $153 on his campaign beat down the president of the Senate. He goes, yeah, I did it. You know why I did it? Because I went to get a CPL, you know, a concealed weapons permit, and they said, no, you can't have one. And I said, to heck with that. So he ran for president of the Senate in New Jersey and won. Here we really have, and I want to say the thing in Virginia, I got to believe that a big part of that, besides the whole thing about being upset about the school board and what they're teaching and critical race theory and all this kind of stuff, a big part of that Virginia comeback on the Republican side was because of the Second Amendment. Do you remember 2 years ago when they had the big rallies at the State Department or at the State House and stuff like that? And everybody, oh, yeah, well, you know, these are a bunch of radicals, you know, and it's all just mom and pop people holding up signs about the Second Amendment and stuff. Well, that Governor Ralph Northam, he paid no attention to that and just did whatever the heck he wanted to do with anti-gun stuff. And it came back to bite the Democrats in the butt. And I do think that is a good analysis of why the Virginia race went the way it did. And a big part of that is not only the thing about them doing things against the school board and against parents and stuff like that, but it was Second Amendment people, Second Amendment rights that made the big difference in Virginia. And it's going to need to continue to do that around the country, okay? And I started to talk about Cook County here in Illinois, and now they're coming back and changing, trying to go after it again. We'll talk about that when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1692.7 FM. I'll be back in a minute.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And I was talking about the Cook County, which is so anti-gun that it's hard to believe. They had imposed a tax on guns and ammo, and the Illinois Supreme Court smacked it down. Okay, so here they are 2 weeks later. They're coming back and they go, oh, yeah, well, our messaging just isn't right. We need to change it a little bit. Well, what they said is you can't go and impede a fundamental right such as the Second Amendment without a tax or funds being used for a substantially related cause. Now, that would be like, for example, and there's not a gun owner I know that complains about some of the money that goes towards conservation and wildlife preservation and stuff like that. And actually, when they talk about all these millions and millions of guns that are sold every year, then that's millions of dollars going towards conservation and wildlife preservation. Preservation of hunting grounds, helping with the DNR to be able to control populations so that you have good hunting herds, not a bunch of emaciated deer out there that are falling down and disease ridden and stuff like that. Well, there's nobody that complains about that, but When the Cook County board president goes out and they go, yeah, well, we're going to tax guns and we're going to use it for public safety, and that includes the criminal justice system. I gotta say, whatever you've been doing in Cook County and Chicago isn't working. So taxing them $25 per gun, and actually the rounds, center fire rounds, 9mm, 5 cents a round, okay? Another $2.50 a box, okay? Same thing for rimfire, a penny a round, okay? And so you go and you buy, a bulk box of 500, that's another $5, okay? And what are you going to use it on? Oh, public safety and anti-violence programs. Yeah, we have to get to the root cause of violence. And we have to figure out how to stop it before it happens. Well, I got a good idea. Get a job, okay? And stop killing each other with gun-related gang stuff, okay? That's maybe if you were going to say, well, we're going to stop and frisk and take guns from people and make sure that if they have a firearm-related arrest of some sort, that they don't get out of jail. Mandatory 2, mandatory 5, whatever it takes. But not the, let's counsel them with public safety. And by the way, thank goodness, Minneapolis voted down on the defund the police stuff. And actually, I was watching last night one of my favorite shows, Blue Bloods, and they had a big article about, a big storyline about defund the police. And they were talking how stupid it was. I got to say, Tom Selleck, who has been a good Second Amendment Foundation representative, and actually talked back when we all felt good about the NRA, which we don't necessarily. I feel like when I get the new NRA Rifleman magazine, I want to take that Wayne LaPierre page and just rip it out first, because I can't even stand to look at the guy anymore. The NRA is still doing okay, but they still have to get rid of some of the riffraff out of there. But Tom Selleck has been, and the Blue Bloods always depicts firearms and stuff in a good light. And I want to say he did it again with law enforcement last night. We have got Tom from Detroit on Scopes. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dick. I was just listening to your last, what you were talking about, and I'm not in favor of that stop and frisk. That's there was a case, Supreme Court case, I believe it was in the 70s, Brown versus Texas, where the Supreme Court said, like, police, you know, just can't, you know, make people start talking to them and things like that, you know, unless they have probable cause of that there's an actual crime. You know, there's the only exception was Terry versus Ohio, and you'd really have to read the case to, you know, we don't have time to go into that. But
Well, I'm thinking in terms of...
And the other thing is, the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, and you look at, there's just been a guy indicted on for, you know, getting information from Russia on this Russia-Trump thing, the thing where Trump was part of the Russian mafia.
Right,
you know? I mean, basically, where they used the Patriot Act to spy on a candidate for president, you know, the other side did. And, you know, we see things like that every day, and then they wonder why kids want to be gangsters when they grow up.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, the whole stop and frisk thing, I would agree if there's no probable cause. When you've got what looks like drug transactions and things going on a street corner, I think that's probable cause and that you should be able to stop and frisk on that kind of thing. That's what cleaned up New York and stuff like that over the years, and I think that they really need to do some of that in Chicago and see how it works. But go ahead.
I think that's a good argument. Now, I wanted to talk about scopes and scope mounting.
Let's do that.
I ran into a real nifty product. I don't know if you ever used the Burr's signature rings. The offset?
Yes, I have used Burr's signature rings, and I've used Burr's. I like Burr's scopes and Burr's rings. So go ahead. What's your point there?
Well, I mean, I was just saying I had a scope, and I was mounting it with the Z rings, you know, on a Weaver base. And on their true mounts, you know, on the side to side, you can kind of adjust what they have that. You know, kind of a knuckle dovetail in the front that'll rotate. But I didn't have enough adjustment in my scope to bring it in. And I got those Burr's signature rings, and I, you know, followed the instructions. And, you know, with the offsets, I had to buy the offsets separate.
But, okay.
Yeah, it did a real nice job of bringing it in without, you know. And, yeah, I looked at a video, a Burr's video, and the guy said, well, our scopes are designed for the light to be coming straight in, and if you use up all of your adjustment just to get on zero, you know, you're going to probably get some glare and things like that. The optics won't be as good.
Yeah, and actually, like you said, the light coming straight in, a lot of people don't recognize, especially, I hate this when I see somebody with a $1,000 rifle and a $30 scope on it. You know what I mean? And the thing is that it's a system. And you have to have, this is from me kind of being a camera geek too, because I always liked good lenses. And there used to be in single lens reflex, there were a lot of good lenses. There were, Nikon had good lenses, Canon had good lenses, and some of the Minoltas, Pentax, things like that, Olympus. And then there were the cheaper ones. But the big thing on scopes these days is about multi-coating and edge coating. And by the way, it also has to do with the number of elements that are in a scope make a difference. And because every time the light goes through an edge, like if you've got 15 elements, that means there's 30 different edges for that light to go through. And every time it can go through an edge, it loses a little bit. Not so much on ones that are multi-coated. And the multi-coated and also the edge coatings prevent that light from splattering and loss. So that's the difference between a cheap scope, which you may have a $39 Tascow from Walmart or something like that, and you go, well, I can see perfectly fine and clear. Yeah, on a bright day, maybe you can, and maybe you don't notice the aberration and stuff like that on the flare and things like that. But when you really notice it with a scope is when you are at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And when the light is low, and you can take a good scope, one with a decent-sized objective lens, so it's got a good amount of light-gathering capability up to a point, and you look through it and you go, oh, my gosh, it looks brighter through the scope than it does with my regular eye. I can't believe this. And then the other way that they handle that is the different scopes have what are called aspherical lenses, which are ones that are not ground just like a concave or a convex, but they have a shape to them, and they're able to reduce the number of light or of lens components in there. And so it all works together. First of all, the good glass and the multi-coatings and edge coatings, and then a good set of mounts and rails or rings and things like that. Because if you're fighting with it in that you're using up all of your adjustment, you're kind of like cockeyed through the side, and then you're having to take it back out again by adjusting the reticle, you are hurting things. So you're absolutely right, Tom.
Well, do you think BERS and Leupold are pretty much equal in optics, or
I want to say well, Leupold, some of the, oh gosh, what's the other ones? There's some German ones. I have some Zeiss ones, and I have BERS, I have Leupold, I have Zeiss. For the most part, that's what all my scopes are. There, what is it? The gosh darn it! It's the one that the famous German binoculars are made, Swarovski. Okay, that's a top of the line. I want to say, if you go underneath that, Burris is a next step down, and Burris is not a value kind of one, but it's the kind of just a next step down a little bit. And I want to say there's a good spot for those too. There's a lot of people who will buy, because a Leupold can cost you $1,000 or $1,500, okay? A Swarovski can cost you $5,000, okay? There's a lot of people who can afford $500 on a scope. And those, although Nikon is stopping to make them, I used to like Nikon scopes too, but because of their glass quality, but the Burris's, and some of the newer ones too. There's some value ones in the Vortexes, and it's interesting because all of a sudden ones have kind of come out of the woodworks as far as tactical scopes, Nighthawks, Vortexes, things like that. That they have put a lot of money into the mechanisms and the design of them. I really like Burris. I think I have three or four Burris scopes, including even on some of my rimfires, and I really like the Burris. So I think they're, and I do believe they're a good notch up on value, but not quite to Leupold. Okay?
Okay, we all better go. You know, I think we might be scaring the deer.
Oh, gosh, I just saw some memes. I'll have to find them, some good memes about deer hunting, so I'll have to put them on my webpage. That's TriggerTalkRadio.com. Tom, thanks for the call today. Okay, let's see. Here I was talking about, you know what? I am like on page 5 of 37 here. Interesting. Let's see. We're going to only have enough time for a few more stories. One of the big things we're watching is about the Supreme Court with the concealed carry restrictions, and the New York Rifle and Pistol Association, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. And they actually think that Kagan could be a positive vote on this, Elena Kagan, because, you know, it's funny because she used to go out hunting with Scalia, Antonin Scalia. She would go out shooting trap. She'd go out shooting birds. She'd go out shooting deer. And she was actually a Second Amendment supporter. So it's interesting to see. She could very well side with the right side on so to speak, on the Supreme Court on this. So we'll have to see. She actually shoots, she shoots birds And she doesn't mean clay pigeons. She means birds, okay? She'd go out and hunt and shoot birds two or three times a year with Justin Scalia. So I want to say that is an example of where I think that somebody who is supposedly a liberal, okay, and a Democrat, and is liberal in many ways, especially when it comes to things like abortion and stuff like that. However, they can also be open-minded about Second Amendment and gun rights. So we'll see what happens. That's going to be a really interesting one to follow. And for, in a nutshell, what that is about, just so everybody knows, is that New York has the May issue requirements on CPLs and concealed pistol licenses. And same thing actually that caused a New Jersey earthquake. But the thing is that they you know, they leave it up to a group of people. No, I don't think you deserve one. Yeah, you know, you might deserve one if you contribute to the right political endorsements and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's all just crap. That happened in California with that one woman out in like Santa Barbara or something like that, that is actually on the verge of getting kicked out now because she was using her May issue permits as a way to garnish political funding from people and stuff. So very interesting. Oh, yeah, if you buy $200,000 worth of iPads for our department, then you might be able to get a CPL. It has nothing to do with that, okay? So we'll see what happens. And that's going to happen, I want to say, probably, I think they said that it'll be next year before the ruling comes out, but I think we'll find out before then. Let's see. What am I going to go on down to here? This is an interesting story. It made me laugh, okay? Do you know that in Iowa, they were, a study found that as many as 80% of the white-tailed deer sampled in Iowa tested positive for COVID-19. Really? So what is their conclusion from that? Okay, not that maybe COVID-19 is running rampant in the nature, which, you know, who would have thought you can't get it in nature? You know, look at the bats, you know, and China and all that kind of stuff. No, what they come out with is they think that the deer are catching COVID from the hunters, okay? Can you believe this? Okay, so here they are talking about the deers are catching COVID from the... Well, I want to say, in my experience, most hunters do not get close enough to give a deer COVID unless it's already shot, okay? And by... Okay, so I've never claimed to be the sharpest point on the antler. This is one of their guys saying. So I have a little, say I'm a little confused by this hypothesis. Haven't we been told that the risk of human-to-human transmission while outside is slim to none? Even when we're standing closer than 6 feet to one another? And if that's the case, then how on earth are hunters passing on coronavirus to deer while they're up in a tree stand or in a hunting blind? Okay. And then there's the fact that the vast majority of the time a hunter is within 6 feet of the deer, the encounter is going to end with the deer heading off to the freezer, not returning to the herd. I got to say, there must be people working overtime on this whole COVID-19 research stuff. And to try to blame hunters for passing COVID on to the deer, I got to believe there's another reason there. Maybe you just can't see it or something, but typically, maybe they're passing it on to the deer through handling their ammunition, and then that ammunition traveling at 2,500 or 3,000 feet per second and implanting itself in that deer. And in that instant, the whole deer becomes infected with COVID. That's it. That's got to be it. Oh, I don't know. Okay, let's see. Minneapolis voters reject disbanding police department. That's an outstanding story, and it happened all over the country. oh, NBC, one of their reporters, okay, was saying and going to call the Secret Service and complain because one of the companies out there, Palmetto State Armory, is selling a lower for an AR-15, and it's called a Let's Go Brandon lower. Let's Go Brandon. Yeah, so Let's Go Brandon, and so NBC, one of their guys, this is one of the ones who wrote how they were so triggered by firing an AR-15 that it gave him PTSD, and it traumatized him because of the recoil and the amount of muzzle blast that he couldn't function for a week, okay? And then they came back and the pro gun people were showing, now wait a minute, this guy's out here talking about how traumatizing and bad the recoil is, and then they show a video of like a 7-year-old girl shooting one and smiling and hitting the target every time. Yeah, one of these girly men that they have on NBC. But at any rate, he was traumatized and called the Secret Service because of a Let's Go Brandon lower. And it actually says like LETSGO-15, so like an AR-15, and then below it says Brandon. So you kind of read it, Let's Go Brandon. It's just funny. And have you seen the meme? This is one of my favorite, too, where Dr. Jill Biden, I use the term loosely because she's a educational doctor, not a doctor. But Dr. Jill Biden, and she's going, for the love of God, stop it. Now he thinks his first name is Brandon. So Joe out there thinks that his first name is Brandon now because of that. So let's see. What am I going to go on with now? I was reading an article about folding knives. And by the way, I actually, it made me laugh because I was out in the barn yesterday and my wife came out and she was working on something. She goes, do you have a knife? And I go, of course I have a knife. So I gave her a knife. And she goes, open it for me because she had her hands full of stuff. And it made me think about pocket knives. I actually have a couple different ones. I have like thin ones that I might use in a dress, although normally, like if I'm wearing a suit or something like that, I even carried to my father's funeral. If I'm wearing a suit, I'll have a firearm on me, but sometimes I always carry a big knife. Okay, a pocket knife. So I'm reading a story here about what are folder knives and 7 great blade options. And so here I'm looking and I remember, you know, the buck knives and the case knives, and my grandpa always had a knife, and its main blade was almost like a pen knife because he'd ground it down so much to sharpen it. So I'm reading the story and thinking about it. Kids always used to carry knives. And the first one they talk about is the Columbia River Igniter, which is a knife that I have had in my pocket, so much so I keep 2 of them, so that I, in case I ever misplace one, I can, you know, have a backup. And the Columbia River Knife Technology Igniter is the first one on their list. And I saw them at like Dunham's, and I saw them at Cabela's, and they had, they're very reasonable. They're like $56 or something like that. So it's one I would absolutely recommend, and we'll talk about more knives next week when we get back. But the Columbia River Knife Technology, great folder. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll see you next week.